VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Today we have a two-part feature on Crosstalk. I'm going to tell you about the second half first, because at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be connecting with Bill Federer, who will be discussing the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Perhaps he's going to be sharing some things that you're not going to be getting from the national media. So stay with us for the full hour here today. First, we're going to deal with a matter that's really come to a head this week, but it's been brewing for some time. Most recently, a firestorm has erupted in our nation over a tweet sent out by the president, the partial quotes now that coming from the media, and responses from multiple parties, including those known as the Squad. In addition, yesterday a measure came before the House of Representatives in which a vote was taken on whether to proceed or not on the impeachment of President Donald Trump. Joining me in the first segment today, we welcome Jerry Newcomb, senior producer and on-air host, writer for Dr. D. James Kennedy Ministries. He's the author or co-author of some 30 books, The Book That Made America, How the Bible Formed Our Nation, George Washington's Sacred Fire, his latest, American Amnesia, Is America Paying the Price for Forgetting God, The Source of Our Liberty. He was with us for a full program on that topic. Jerry, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Jerry, the issue's been brewing for really a long time, but it's just made a surfacing this week. A lot of fanning of the flames, especially by the media. We're not going to get into all the he said and she said comments and the tweets back and forth, but I think it's important for everyone to at least hear the totality of the tweet that was sent out by President Trump, that we're only getting excerpts from the majority of the media. And this is a tweet that was sent out in which he said, "So interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt, and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how it is done? These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements." Jerry, your thoughts on this matter?
Well, it's funny. The one part of the message that has really gotten out there is the idea of go back home from where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think implied, the way people have said it, is and stay there. And in reality, you've read the full thing. I'll bet you a lot of people listening to this didn't even know there was that element to it in which you said, go fix these things, then come back and help us to fix the mess that we have in our own country. So, you know, I think there's a misunderstanding of all that. And my thing is, I just personally, as an American and as also an author who's done a lot of research and study on America itself, there's a lot of aspects of America that are really terrific. And when you get down to it, just to even think about somebody like Representative Omar, here's somebody who was born in Somalia in Africa, you know, with a lot of fighting going on there, and you know, a lot of difficulty that she would have overcome. Here she gets the opportunity for a new life here in America, and she even gets to become a representative in Congress. And I feel like she should at least be grateful for what this country has to offer instead of always criticizing it and cutting it down. Now, of course, she has the freedom and the right as an American to criticize it all she wants to. It's a free country, she can do that. But I can understand what the president is saying in the sense of, you know, wow, how come everything you say about America is negative? You know, how about some positive things here? And you know, the country you're coming from isn't so great either, you know. I can understand a little bit of his frustration there.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, we're not going to get into the he said and she says, you know, the tweets back and forth, because we will be dealing with the larger picture here. But it seems that there's this growing sentiment of those who literally hate our country. And if people truly hate this nation, as what we've heard expressed in so many different venues, are there not other countries to choose from?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. My wife is from Norway, and I've gotten to be able to visit there on their big Independence Day, which is the 17th of May. And honestly, they take it a lot more seriously than we do. And the interesting thing is that in some ways, 17th of May, which is 17th of May, is not only is it a bigger deal, but it, in some ways it's inspired by America. A lot of people don't realize this. A lot of the constitutions in the world came about after the United States wrote up this agreement for self-government that was approved by the consent of the governed, we the people. That's what makes America so great, and it became a model for what many other countries did. And so when Norway developed its own constitution and adopted that on the 17th of May, and I believe the year was 1814, it became their Independence Day, and it's a big deal, and they celebrate it, and they love their country, and well, they ought to. And I think we in America ought to love our country, too.
Yeah.
And it's a free country. If you don't love it, then that's fine. I understand. It's just, please recognize that this country offers a lot of great opportunities. I wrote a column a couple weeks ago called The Era of the Ungrateful American. And I used the soccer star as a kind of the springboard, because she said, I will never sing the national anthem. And she made other statements that implied she just doesn't like this country because she's always seen the negative things, the negative aspects, the parts that we do need to, you know, improve on and so forth. Or one could argue that we do need to in those particular areas. Some of that's controversial. But anyway, bottom line is, she has what she has, including this great opportunity to exceed in this sport and do real well and, you know, become the star of the big women's team that won and so forth. I don't even follow sports that much at all, but I've heard of her. And so anyway, I'm just surprised. And by the way, that column somehow struck a nerve. I mean, one of the outlets that runs the columns, last time I checked, it had 640,000 shares. In other words, 640,000 times people had shared that particular column, again, called The Era of the Ungrateful American. I've never had any response even remotely like that. I think it struck a nerve, and I feel like it's biting the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, indeed, and I'd like to unwrap that column just a little bit here, Jerry, because, yes, you referenced Megan Rapinoe from the women's soccer team with her comments, but I guess it's also evidenced in the Colin Kaepernicks of this nation, if you will, those who will kneel, you know, at the national anthem, or it's the Nikes of this nation removing a shoe because it's got a Betsy Ross flag and that's offensive, and the list could go on and on and on. But unwrap that for us more, this thought you have of your concern of the ungrateful American.
Well, I think we need to realize that this country didn't just come out of thin air. It came because of the sacrifices of so many people who came before us, beginning with the pilgrims and the incredible sacrifice. In fact, right now I'm involved in a television program where we're unpacking more and more of the detail of the pilgrims. My goodness, when you realize the price that they paid just so they could worship Jesus Christ in the purity of conscience, without the fear of the government, you know, bursting open the doors and then arresting them for not worshiping in the way that the church, the state church was forcing them. And they started, the Puritans did and the pilgrims, they started this, you know, system here in America where people can worship in their own way according to the dictates of conscience. And eventually, by the time you get to the founding fathers, they too sacrifice. In fact, when you looked at a lot of the column I wrote about that, the era of the ungrateful America, it was a July 4th column. So a lot of it had to do with the fact that the 56 men who agreed and then later signed the Declaration of Independence, they knew that they were putting their lives on the line. They even said, with a trust in divine providence, so in other words, trusting in God, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Huh.
They laid it all on the line. Some of them went bankrupt helping the American cause, and some of them were literally killed, targeted by the British because, of having signed the Declaration of Independence. And they paid this price for their posterity, which is us.
Yes.
And so we ought to at least acknowledge, hey, thank you. Thank you, John Adams. Thank you for the sacrifices you made. Thank you, Sam Adams. My goodness, Sam Adams. No Sam Adams, no revolution. Thank you, Patrick Henry. Thank you, George Washington.
Hmm.
George Washington, I wrote a column recently about him, and he's been dethroned as a hero, and he's lost his Christianity, supposedly, which is not true, but basically because he had owned slaves. Now, he was from a family of four generations of slaveholders, and by the time he died, he got things right, and he freed his slaves, slaves that he had inherited by marriage or just inherited, from his own family estate. And he freed them and made provisions for them, and he never gets credit for this. But furthermore, George Washington sacrificed a lot of personal life and, comfort and so forth, and he could have had a life of ease in many ways, but he sacrificed all that for the sake of this country, for the sake of us, his posterity. So, please, America, let's study our history and realize, why is it that people like Omar and her family and the family of Tlaib and so forth, why do they want to come here to America? So that they could practice their faith and not be molested, not have the government burst in, open the doors and arrest them or whatever. They could create a new life here. So we've got something good here. And frankly, what's happening is I think these liberals that are just trying to, continually downgrade America, they think somehow they're good. They could maybe destroy the country and then rebuild it in a better way, and they don't realize we've gone down that road before, we being humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity's gone down that road before. We've destroyed great, once great countries and turned them into heck holes. Venezuela had the best economy 30 years ago, but the policies of AOC, that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who basically promotes socialism, or Bernie Sanders policies, those types of policies put into practice in Venezuela turned it from the best economy or one of the very best economies in Latin America to a complete basket case. And so, I'm arguing let's be careful here what's going on and let's look back and appreciate. And you know what? I think, Jim, though, it all begins with gratitude toward God.
Yes.
Because if you're not grateful to God, then it's easy to not be grateful for your country as well.
Let's take a break here. With us is Jerry Newcomb today, and asking this question, America, what makes our nation great? We'll be back with some further thoughts in our next segment here as well with Jerry Newcomb, and the bottom of the hour, Bill Federer coming up to join us as well. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there any evidence for Atlantis?
Chris, Atlantis was the mythical city which was submerged under the ocean. People living in the city adapted and finally evolved the ability to live underwater. Of course, this myth has no basis in fact. Humans could not live underwater, even if they swam in the water for generations. Nor have archaeological remains of such a mythical city ever been found. But there may be some basis in fact. The Bible says that there was a great civilization which was totally overwhelmed by water. This was, of course, the great flood of Noah's day. I wonder if the legend of Atlantis is really a faded memory of the flood. Even more interesting is that almost every culture around the world has the legend of the flood. I think all of this goes back to Genesis for truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Jerry Newcomb with us here today. He's the author of American Amnesia, Is America Paying the Price for Forgetting God, the Source of Our Liberty? And just before we continue on, Jerry, how can our listeners get a copy of that book?
Yes, jerrynewcomb.com. Jerrynewcomb.com. In fact, right at the top, there's a direct link to it with more information and so forth. Plus, you can read any of my columns or radio shows hear my radio shows, whatever.
Well, as you know, Jerry, also on the heels of now the House having this vote condemning the president this week, came this resolution by Representative Al Green of Texas to start impeachment proceedings against President Trump. We saw a vote, 332 members of the Congress voted in favor of tabling the resolution. 95 wanted to advance the impeachment inquiry to a committee. One member voted present. But again, the bigger picture here, it seems that the politicalization of our nation is at an all-time high. Your thoughts on that issue?
Yeah, and I think that's a shame. I hope that we could become, more united and so forth. But, you look at even things like the flag itself is now no longer something that unites Americans. The national anthem no longer, unites us. In fact, could I say a little bit about the national anthem? Because I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Sure.
I think there was some misinformation that was promoted at one point about the national anthem about 3 or 4 years ago. But around the time that Colin Kaepernick was starting to his protests against the national anthem and participating in it. And one of the things that was said is that it supposedly was a pro-slavery song or something like that, had a pro-slavery sentiment behind it. And that's incorrect. The national anthem basically was born at a time when the British, after they had burned down the White House in Washington, D.C., and they burned down the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., a month later, in September 1814, they went to try and attack a much more plush city at the time, which was Baltimore. And standing in the way of their attack of Baltimore was Fort McHenry. And Francis Scott Key, who was the one who wrote the words for the national anthem, he was, as part of a prisoner exchange or whatever, he ended up being overnight on a British boat. So he was kind of held captive just for that one night. But he watched what was happening as the fort was being attacked. And the question was, at the twilight's last gleaming, in other words, as the sun was going down, I could see that the flag was there. The question is, would it be there in the morning? That was the real question. As the bombs were bursting at night, he could see, that the British were just mercilessly attacking the fort. And he was so happy the next morning that he saw that yes, it was there. Oh, say, can you see? By the dawn's early light, was so proudly we hailed. And this is what it was all about. Now, the word pressment is an important word. The reason that there was even this 1812 war in the first place, of which this was a part of, this attack on Fort McHenry by the British, the reason was, what happened was, America was a new nation, and British naval ships would come up to American ships, and not respecting the United States of America as a separate, new country, even though we had already had peace and everything, the peace between Britain and America, 1783. Anyway, the British Navy ships would actually go on board American ships, and if they found any sailors aboard or any American citizens, frankly, that were on these ships that had been born in Britain, they would take those men and force them into the British Navy against those men's will. And that practice was called pressment. And it was a type of, you know, kind of like slavery, but, you know, it was against those people's will. That's what the national anthem, you know, any kind of the pressment that's associated with the national anthem. And so, anyway, the bottom line is I think the national anthem has, you know, turned out to be just a tremendous force for unifying us. But I guess, you know, I don't know, Jim, I don't know if, you know, let's say 10 years from now, where do you think the national anthem will be in terms of people's feelings or respect? I don't really know.
Well, it's kind of troubling to see the trajectory that we're on.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we had to look also at that the latter verse in the Star-Spangled Banner, praise the power that made and preserved us a nation, then conquer we must when our course it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And certainly we need to get back to that recognition that our trust is in God. And Jerry, I'd just like to ask, how far do you believe we've gone as a nation? I was just listening to the John Ankerberg commentary today, and they brought out the irony that for some reason it's permissible for players in sports to kneel before a game at the singing of the national anthem, but for some reason it's a violation for coach to kneel after the game in prayer. Something's wrong here, Jerry.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great point. In fact, I think there is a strong link, you know, going back to the issue of, you know, God and country, but the thing, there's a very important point about God, and that is that, you know, not that all the founders of America were Christian or whatever, but most of them were, and most of them were, you know, active in Trinitarian churches and so forth, but there is a link, I think, between appreciating, your country and what your country has to offer and your appreciation of God. I love the American tradition of Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I really do. I just think it's, ever since I was a kid, I've just always found that to be one of my favorite holidays of the whole year. And I think just that idea to have a day that we set aside as a nation to say thank you to God. Now, of course, obviously, many people don't practice it that way necessarily, but there is a strong link. And, you know, looking at this way, too, in Romans chapter 1, Paul talks about the wrath of God that's revealed from heaven against those who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. They have a knowledge about God, but they suppress that knowledge and instead deny him. Neither did they give him thanks.
Right.
And then it goes on from, you know, from there, then they degenerate and degenerate and degenerate into gross immorality, into gross sin, things that God thinks and says are wrong, grossly wrong. And I think the link between gratitude and, you know, a positive trajectory for your life and for a nation is very strong, and the link between ingratitude and, you know, that kind of thing, and a negative trajectory and immorality is very strong as well.
So is that what you see?
Gratitude is extremely important.
Yeah, so is that what you see as being the pathway forward here? I mean, you wrote of the ungrateful American, and looking how do we change that spirit of the ungrateful American to that point of being a thankful American, is that the pathway forward then? Is that focus
well,
on
think,
God in this?
I think the ultimate hope for America, you know, is, as everybody says, basically is genuine revival. Mm. And it's realizing, you know, that we do need to be grateful. I can't speak for anybody else. I can't speak for another American and say, you know, you got to be grateful or whatever, but I just want to say I am grateful, and I recognize I've had the privilege to travel to other countries. I remember one time I was in one country, I was actually in Latin America, and I was looking at the way some people were living. I was looking at the housing, substandard housing that they had, and thank God for the missionaries that do a lot to try and elevate those things and you know, lift people up out of this grinding kind of poverty. But I remember thinking, no, oh, dear God, forgive me ever for being ungrateful. You know, any day, you know, complaining about anything when I look at the way these people are actually living.
Mm-hmm.
it made me realize how ungrateful I am as a person and stuff. But I think there's a strong link between gratitude and positive attitude and, you know, positive outcome. You know, by the way, I even did a little research one time on the issue of gratitude and psychology, and I found out that psychologists have studied this issue a little bit, and they're basically saying, you know, in effect, that the Bible was right all along. They don't mention the Bible by name or anything, but when Paul says, rejoice in all things and give thanks in all circumstances, he really was ahead of his field. I mean, this is a much more positive outcome for a human being and much more happy. And by the way, that's another thing. The people who are perpetually ungrateful, and, you know, it's one thing to say there's injustice and we need to address this issue. Okay, fine. Let's do it. But it's another thing to just be constantly grousing and always complaining about everything and always being ungrateful. And the fact of the matter is that the people who practice gratitude on a regular basis end up being a lot more happy. Just there's a link between the two. D. James Kennedy, my longtime pastor and mentor, and I still work at D. James Kennedy Ministries as a TV producer, and I'm very privileged to be in that job. And he once preached a sermon called The Christian's Magic Wand. And the Christian's magic wand was gratitude. Because it just changes everything. It changes your perspective. And I think one of America's biggest problems, not only are we angry today, not only are we rude today, but at heart, we're ungrateful today.
Yeah. And that is something also we need to recognize in all of this, Jerry, too. The turnstiles of those coming to our nation are forever turning. I mean, people are seeking, and by any means possible, to get into our nation.
Yeah.
There must be something about this nation that is drawing people.
Yes, that's very true. In fact, think about the example of socialism, capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? By their feet, people are voting, trying to get here, to America. The border crisis, in some ways, a lot of it is just a reflection of the fact that capitalism is working. Now, go to Venezuela. I mentioned Venezuela earlier in this program. It's my understanding that as many as 4 million Venezuelans have left that country within the last few years. And they've left because of socialism. And the reason people are trying to get into this country, and even in some cases doing it illegally, in some cases risking their lives to do so, is because of the success of capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. Jerry Newcomb, totally amazing as we examine this. And again, folks, to have that attitude of gratitude here as a nation. Are we a perfect nation? Absolutely not. Change needs to take place. But that's where you and I come in as well. We need to be praying for our nation. We need to be praying for our nation's leaders, regardless of what side of the aisle they fall on, that the Scripture calls upon us to do that. Jerry, again, if you would give us the website where our listeners can get more information about yourself and even your book, American Amnesia, Is America Paying the Price for Forgetting God, the Source of Our Liberty?
Sure, that's jerrynewcomb.com. Newcomb is spelled N-E-W-C-O-M-B-E. And I've got all kinds of information about all those books that I've had the privilege to write, or in some cases co-write, like What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? Book I wrote with Dr. Kennedy many years ago.
Jerry, just hang on the line here, if you would, for a moment. But thank you so much for being with us today and addressing this important issue.
Thank you.
Great. Stay with us here. And listeners, you stay with us as well. Bill Federer joining us here momentarily as we take a look at the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Back in 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Racism is a charge often leveled in today's society. But did you know that we are all one race? Of one blood? We are all part of the human race. It is imperative for children to understand what God's Word says on this subject, that they know the true history of life, so that we can build a truly Christian worldview and address the matter correctly. In the hardcover book, One Blood for Kids, author Ken Ham addresses this critical issue in a way that brings understanding to children. This book takes the reader on a spiritual journey presenting the real history of man, the connections between us, and how the variations of our skin tones reflect the creativity of our Creator. Fascinating facts and full-color illustrations are throughout the book. One Blood for Kids is available for a donation of $17 or two copies for a donation of $30 from BCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
And this is Crosstalk on BCY America. Bill Federer joining us now. He is a historian, speaker, author, president of Amerisearch, authored numerous books, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, Original 13, History of Religion, America's First 13 States, Who is the King in America, and many, many others. He's the author, or rather the speaker, on the American Minute Daily Broadcast. Bill, good to have you with us today.
Jim, great to be with you.
Bill, 50 years ago, July 20, 1969, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin make this historic walk on the moon. I was just 8 years old at the time. My family was vacationing in Florida. We missed seeing the launch, but we did not miss some of the coverage of Apollo 11 and their walk on the moon. And though our time is limited, Bill, if you would take us back, what we'd like to do even in this portion that we have with you is to uncover, you know, the faith of the astronauts, scriptures quoted from space, to some of the things that we're not hearing in the media as this 50th anniversary comes about. But, Bill, take us back to this moment in history.
Well, a little background. So Robert Goddard, 1899, he is a teenager, and he read Jules Verne's War of the Worlds, and he has this idea of a ship that can go to space. And so he develops rockets, liquid-fueled rockets, and there's pictures of him standing in front of a barn with a couple guys holding one. Anyway, he is the father of American rocketry. Some of his stuff is seen by some Germans, and they started German Rocketry Society, but then Hitler begins to use it to create the V-2, and then World War II is ending, and there's Operation Paperclip. There's a rush between the Soviets and Americans to gather these German scientists, and Wernher von Braun is the German. He says, "We knew we had developed a new weapon, and we decided we wanted to entrust it to the side that was guided by the Bible."
Hmm.
And so Wernher von Braun comes to America after World War II. Well, Russia then launches in 1957 the Sputnik, and this just shocks America that they beat us to space. It is the first man-made satellite. And so the very next year, Wernher von Braun launches the Explorer 1, the American satellite. And then, in 1961, the Russians launched the first man in space, Yuri Gagarin. And he circles the Earth once. And then, the next year, we launched Alan Shepard. He goes up for 15 minutes, but he did go into space. And then we have John Glenn. He circles the Earth three times, and now we're beginning to edge ahead. So we go from the Mercury program to the Gemini program, and then finally to the Apollo program. So Apollo 1 burns up on the launch pad, and they die. And then they do a bunch of fixing of it all and so forth. And finally, we have Wernher von Braun develops the Saturn V rocket. Now, little definition. An astronaut is someone who goes 62 miles above the Earth's surface, or 100 kilometers. And 560-some-odd people have gone 62 miles above the Earth's surface. Only 24 have ever broken out of Earth's gravitational pull. And you need a Saturn V rocket to do that. This is an enormous rocket as long as a football field. I've been to the NASA Kennedy Space Center. I spoke there several years ago. We had dinner underneath this thing, just hanging there in the big museum. Anyway, so Apollo 8 is the first mission to leave the Earth's gravitational pull and circle the moon and come back. And it is on Christmas 1968, and the astronauts, Frank Borman, Bill Anders, and Jim Lovell, they read the book of Genesis over the radio, looking at the Earth from a distance. It's so profound. What do they say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. I mean, they read the whole thing.
Wow.
And 100 million people on Earth hear it, including Madeleine Murray O'Hare, an atheist. So she threatens to sue NASA. So from this point, they say, okay, if you're going to do anything space-related, Faith, you got to turn your mic off. And so now we got Apollo 11. And we have Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Mike Collins, and they go toward the moon. They detach. They're landing on the moon. The lunar module
Nixon says, you know, it calls the nation to pray for the successful conclusion of their mission. The radar in the lunar module is looking up at the Columbia and looking down at the moon's surface. They forgot to flip a switch. And so the radar is like dithering. In other words, it can't figure out where they're going to land, and alarms go off, and they almost abort the mission, but they switch off the computers and they land the thing manually. So Buzz Aldrin is speaking out the altitudes and speeds, and Neil Armstrong's at the control looking out the window. They're going too fast. They're missing the spots that they're supposed to miss. And so they're running out of fuel, and he's manually looking for a place to land this thing. As they're getting closer, the propulsion kicks up moon dust, and they're blinded. And so now he's trying to go around these boulders, and they land. Now, they have some quiet time, and of course, after the quiet time, Neil Armstrong is the first one out, and his line, he says, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The second person on the moon is Buzz Aldrin. He was so popular that the Buzz Lightyear character is named after him, Buzz Lightyear, Buzz Aldrin. Anyway, a story that many people don't know about is that when they first landed and they had some quiet time, Buzz Aldrin says, I want to ask all those on Earth to commemorate in their own way the momentousness of this. And then he asks for radio silence, and he celebrates communion. He celebrates communion on the moon, Buzz Aldrin. He had gone to Webster Presbyterian Church in Houston. It's called the Astronauts Church because John Glenn and a bunch went there. And he's talking with his pastor, Dean Woodruff, how they can, you know, commemorate this landing on the moon. He gives them a little silver goblet, and they have communion at the church. And he takes a piece of the bread, puts it in a plastic pouch, and then some grape juice in a little plastic container. And he carries this with him amongst us. He said every astronaut gets to take a little personal item. Neil Armstrong took a little pin, diamond-studded pin, from the widows of Apollo 1 that they were burned up on the launch pad. He took that to the moon. But anyway, so here's Buzz Aldrin. He takes a silver goblet, and he pours the juice in 1/6 gravity. In other words, it comes out real slow, and you can watch it pouring down into the little goblet. It does a slow curl at the bottom of the goblet. And then he reads John 15. I'm the vine, you are the branches. You can do nothing apart from me. And then he drinks the grape juice. And this is amazing. The first food consumed on the moon is communion.
Wow.
Celebrating the body and blood of Christ on the moon. And anyway, now a couple other things. They do the moonwalk. They get back in the module. They got these suits on. They're really bulky. They're life support packs, which has, you know, temperatures and like a refrigeration unit and their oxygen. They kick the circuit breaker for the ignition for the rockets that are supposed to launch them off the moon, and the circuit breaker breaks. So now they're back in the module, what do? They finally find a felt tip pen, and they're able to shove the little piece back into the right spot. Now, another thing people don't remember, the Russian space race, remember that?
Yeah.
Russians launch an unmanned lunar landing module at the exact same time. And it is landing, believe it or not, it crashes into the moon not far from the Eagle just 2 hours before Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong blast off of the moon. And so they landed in what, the Sea of Tranquility, the next sea over. Now, it's not a water sea. It's just when, you know, your astronauts ages back, you know, name those craters on the moon. Mm-hmm. Well, the next one over was the Mare Crisium, or the Sea of Crisis. So we got Sea of Tranquility, Peace, and Sea of Crisis. You know, well, the Russian lunar landing module crashes into the Sea of Crisis right next to the Sea of Tranquility just 2 hours before Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong blast off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in this... Do we have to take a break?
We've got another 5 minutes, 4 minutes.
Okay, so back up in the command module called the Columbia, you have Mike Collins. And he circles the dark side of the moon alone, right? So we had, you know, Apollo 8 circle, but they had three guys in there. And so this was him. For the first time ever, you have a single solo man. He's cut off from all radio contact with the Earth. And he said, never since Adam has there been a man more alone than me. He goes, on the other side of the moon are two astronauts, and then, you know, however many billion of people on Earth. But he goes, on this side, it's me and God knows what else. And so he circles 30-some-odd times, 57 miles above the moon's surface, for the 21-some-odd hours that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are on the moon's surface. Buzz Aldrin got his doctorate from MIT in the science of redocking a lunar module back to a command module. And but you have to understand, this is amazing science that they're doing. Well, they needed 7 minutes of burn. So they're on the moon, they ignite their rockets, they need to burn for 7 minutes to get them high enough. And Mike Collins is saying, you know, if they don't have enough fuel, and they don't reach this upper they'd be stuck in orbit around the moon. Hmm. And they'd die, and they'd just be stuck there forever. And so he's, like, praying that they make it up there, and of course they do. And then they're headed back to the Earth, and it's just an amazing situation. So you have Neil Armstrong in the module coming back saying, you know, God bless all those that are on Earth. Later, Neil Armstrong speaks to Congress, and he says, to all you who have advocated looking high, I want to thank you because you've allowed us to see some of the grandest views of the Creator. And so he acknowledges the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Buzz Aldrin is coming back, he says, this was more than just three men on a mission to the moon. He says, when a verse from Psalms comes to mind, when I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, and the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? And
wow.
So he does recite that scripture over the radio. That was Buzz Aldrin. Just some amazing history that people don't know about that is going to be acknowledged here on July 20th, 50 years after this event took place.
And indeed, and I saw your quote, too, here from Frank Borman on that Apollo 8, had been questioned as to whether he'd seen God, and he said, no, I did not see him either, but I saw his evidence. And so true there, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And of course, the Soviets, there was an atheistic government that they had, and they were very materialistic, and it highlights the faith that the astronauts had, all the way back to John Glenn. He was at a press conference in 1959, and they're asking him about his faith, and he goes, I'm a Protestant Presbyterian, and he says, I take my faith seriously, and he teaches Sunday school classes, and he's on church boards, and so he, you know, talks about it being a 50-50 proposition, and that you do everything you can do, and then the Lord will do the rest, and stuff like that. So it's just amazing to hear that these were Americans, they were courageous, and they were men, and obviously their wives supporting them, but also the women that were involved in the science behind it all and working there at NASA, doing all their... But this was an effort, but we can't, as the world does, we can't ignore the faith that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back, I can share some of the stories of some of the other astronauts.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about Charles Duke. I'd like to hear about Charles Duke in particular after the break here. Bill Fetter is our guest today, and you can hear him on the American Minute Daily broadcast, but he's a historian, a speaker. He is author of numerous books, and we'll have him give out his website here after the break as well. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network as our segment right now on the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Back in just 1 minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Recently, an article in Physics World revealed exactly what we've been saying in our series on brainwashed America, that those desiring to brainwash people will use those who are perceived to have credibility. They'll use those with credibility, put them up in front of a group, and use their credibility to brainwash someone into believing that which is not true. Well, recently, as I said, Physics World did an article where a group of evangelicals took a supposed expert scientist on global warming, who claims to be an evangelical, put her up in front of a bunch of Christian university students, largely many of them who did not believe in the myth of man-made global warming. Well, the study showed that simply putting her up as an expert by their conservative, so-called, Christian, so-called, leaders increased their chances of switching their position. They went from being against man-made global warming to for it. It shows you how brainwashing can occur.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, talking about the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Bill Federer is our guest today. And it's interesting, just outside the door, the office door for the main administrative side here at VCY America, here we have a picture that had been given to us by astronaut Jim Irwin from Apollo 15. At that time, he was with the High Flight Foundation. He was one that did pursuits of searching for Noah's Ark and certainly was talking about his time on the moon as well. But on the placard, he wrote this, to Wisconsin Voice of Christian Youth, and that was our corporate name before VCY America. And he wrote this. He said, Jesus walking on the earth is more important than man walking on the moon. Bill, he was with Apollo 15.
Wow, wow. That's a powerful quote. I want to snap a picture of that with your phone and send it to me.
Sure.
I'll include that in myself. You know, there's so many. When Richard Nixon, when Apollo 11 blasts off, again, 50 years ago, this July 16th, well, I guess that was 2 days ago, blast it off. But Nixon said Apollo 11 is on its way to the moon. It carries three brave astronauts, also carries the hopes and prayers of hundreds of millions of people. The moment when man first sets his foot on a body other than the Earth will stand through centuries as one of supreme human experience. I call upon all our people to join in prayer for the successful conclusion of the Apollo 11 mission. And then we're all familiar when the astronauts did talk on the moon to Nixon. Nixon says, this is certainly the most historic telephone call ever made from the White House. Mm-hmm. The heavens have become part of man's world. For one priceless moment, the whole history of man, all the people on the earth are truly one, one in our prayers that for your safe return. So, and then when they land, Nixon says, millions who are seeing us on television now feel as I do, that our prayers are answered. I think it would be very appropriate if Chaplain Pirito, the chaplain of this ship, were to offer a prayer of thanksgiving.
Wow.
So, again,
these are not things we're going to be hearing about, you know, in the evening newscast, Bill, and I appreciate that. I know at Mission Control in Houston, there was one, Charles Duke, NASA's CAPCOM during the Apollo 11 moon landing, and he later flew to the moon in Apollo 16. He had some interesting things to say as well.
Right, so you got Charles Duke about Apollo 14 left a microfilm copy of the King James Bible on the moon. So wanted to throw that in there to know that, gee, right on the moon there is actually a copy of the Bible. And but Charles Duke, he was the CAPCOM, and what's that? It's the capsule communicator. So that's the one that actually does the talking to the people in the space module. And so here he's back on Earth, and he says how he speaks around the world. I spoke to ministers and junta leaders, dictators, businessmen, beggars, rich, poor, black and white. One of the most touching times was in the cabinet meeting in Israel. And he said, they asked him his experience. He said, Mr. Minister, I was able to look back at the Earth from the moon and hold my hand. And underneath this hand was the Earth. And I thought, it occurred to me that underneath my hand were 4 billion people. I couldn't see Europe, America, the Middle East. I couldn't see black and white, Jews or Orientals, just spaceship Earth. I realized that we needed to learn to love one another and believe that with that love, our technical expertise, we could solve problems. And then he goes, the promises of the Bible are true. And I believe that they speak truth in every area, spiritual matters, nutrition, history, and even science. Charles Duke goes on. He says, in 1972, aboard Apollo 16, I saw with my own eyes what is written in scriptures, Isaiah 40:22. He sitteth upon the circle of the earth. And then in Job 26:7, it is written, he hangeth the earth upon nothing. And he goes on, who told Isaiah that the earth was a circle? How did the writer of Job know that the earth was hung upon nothing? Charles Duke says,
And this is the Lord that I love and serve. This is the Lord who transformed my life. And then the really exciting thing, he says, I used to say I could live 10,000 years and never have an experience as thrilling as walking on the moon. But the excitement and satisfaction of that walk doesn't begin to compare with my walk with Jesus.
No.
A walk that lasts forever.
Hmm.
And he goes on, I thought Apollo 16 would be my crowning glory. But the crown that Jesus gives will not tarnish or fade away. His crown will last throughout all eternity. Charles Duke says, not everyone has the opportunity to walk on the moon, but everyone has the opportunity to walk with the sun. It costs billions of dollars to send someone to the moon, but walking with Jesus is free, the gift of God. For by grace are you saved through faith and not of yourselves. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Charles Duke ends by saying, you don't need to go to the moon to find God. I didn't find God in space. I found him in the front seat of my car on Highway 46 in New Braunfels, Texas. When I opened my heart to Jesus, he was listening to the radio,
yeah. And
my life has not been the same since.
Wow.
Now I can truly look up at the moon and the stars with the prophets and exclaim, the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament showeth his handiwork.
Wow, wow. Powerful testimony, Bill, and these are things that we need to remember even as we commemorate this 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And I know you've shared a lot of information on this. There's even more that you hadn't gotten to, but is this available on your website where people can even read more information on the faith of the astronauts and so forth?
Yes, AmericanMinute.com, and I have little posts for every single day of the year. And the one coming up on July 20th is on the communion on the moon. And, you know, John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth, when he's 77 years old, he's a U.S. senator, he gets to go up in the space shuttle. He's the oldest guy ever to go in space.
Yeah.
And before he dies, he says, to look out at this kind of creation and not believe in God is, to me, impossible. It just strengthens my faith. I wish there were words to describe what it's like.
Praise the Lord. Again, folks, the website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. Bill, we've got 30 seconds. What do you want to leave with our listeners on this issue?
Well, just the fact that we're worshiping the creator of the moon, right? The creator of the stars, and he created you, and God has a plan for each person, and God is a God of love, and he wants us to love him back. He can't force us, because the moment he forces us, it's not love. It's obedience and submission, but it's not love. He wants us to love him, so he gives us voluntary choice, and anyway, the beauty of the gospel is that Jesus did die on the cross to pay for our sins, so we can have a relationship with God and love
him. Amen, amen. Well, Bill, we so appreciate you joining us here on the broadcast today to commemorate this 50th anniversary.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so very much. And again, folks, when we consider, you know, the heavens that God hath ordained, and we see the moon, we see the sun, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For us, the program today has been encouragement to you. Thanks so much for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.